Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the BHP Billiton briefing, hosted by Chief Executive Officer Andrew Mackenzie and Chief Financial Officer Peter Rivers. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Given time restrictions, we will be limited to one question per person. I will now hand you over to BHP Billiton's Chief Executive Officer, Andrew Mackenzie.
Thank you, and good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for your interest in today's presentation. So, as you're all aware, the U.S. hedge fund Elliott have outlined a number of suggested changes to our company in a letter to our board. We've been engaging with Elliott for around 8 months, and early on I was genuinely excited to enter into these discussions. I thought Elliott could bring good ideas that we may have missed for value creation around the themes they chose: the dual-listed company structure, petroleum, and our approach to capital allocation. We're constantly looking for ways to create more value for our shareholders and welcome ideas from all shareholders, including everyone on this call. I had hoped that perhaps the Elliott had found some breakthroughs that we had missed, and we might be able to work together to create novel solutions. However, it has to be said that from our earlier engagements, it was clear there were significant flaws in Elliott's proposals, and despite huge amounts of constructive feedback from our side over many months, Elliott have been unwilling to consider any of our alternative views. We have a better way towards value, and one that is about value for all of our shareholders and stakeholders. For more than 130 years, and in pursuit of long-term shareholder value, this company has delivered for shareholders, and also for employees, customers, suppliers, and our host governments and communities, the communities in which we work. And we intend to continue this approach to long-term shareholder value creation, because we believe in this integrated way is how we assure these things can be sustainably done over many periods. I'm passionate about the values of this company, its heritage, and its future, all of which are also key drivers of long-term shareholder value. And it's through this expanded lens, or set of lenses, that we've assessed Elliott's proposals, which Peter and I will now step through. Before we begin, let me first draw your attention to the disclaimer and ask you to note its importance to this presentation. We have given detailed and thorough consideration to all of the matters that Elliott have raised, and not just in recent months, but over many years, where we've considered analogous proposals many times. So this is a highly considered response. And we've concluded that the elements of Elliott's proposal, as they're described in their letter to our board, would not be in the best interest, the best long-term interest of shareholders. That the costs and other disadvantages would significantly outweigh, we feel, the potential benefits. We believe that our current strategy is an exciting one. It's the right one at this point in the cycle and for our shareholders over the long term, with some short-term improvements built in as well. Every decision we make is grounded, though, in our determination to optimize value in the long-term interests of all shareholders, as I've already commented. And we're on a deliberate path to do this sustainably and extend our track record. Our simplification journey is well advanced. Since 2013, we've reduced the number of assets in the portfolio by more than a third, through the demerger of South 32 and the sale of over $7 billion of assets. Our assets, those that remain, are large, long life, and low costs, and provide exposure to a diverse mix of commodities, all with an attractive outlook. And we've sharpened the focus of our operations on the things that matter most to us: safety, culture, and productivity. And our evolving culture will drive even more safety and productivity, and most importantly, improved returns. In February, we announced that we'd secured $11 billion in annualized productivity gains over the last 4 years, and that there was significant value still to come from our assets and initiatives across the company, and that we were well positioned to capitalize further on these opportunities and more. Petroleum is, has been, and will remain core to our business, and we expect to deliver material value from it going forward. Last month, I traveled to Mexico City to meet with President Nieto and to celebrate our new partnership with Pemex Exploration for the development of the Trion discovery in the Gulf of Mexico. We were the first foreign company invited to partner in the development of the field with Pemex for over 80 years, and this opportunity would only have been possible by having our petroleum business integrated in our larger minerals business. Our disciplined, rigorous approach to capital allocation has seen us strengthen our balance sheet in the recent half year against a low in the cycle. Net debt, for example, was reduced by $6 billion in the first half of financial year 17. So Elliott have outlined three suggestions which they argue would result in a listed share price. They are the unification of the DLC under a new UK incorporated NewCo, a demerger of a major part, but not all, of our petroleum business, and a mechanistic buyback program. A summary of our conclusions is detailed on this slide, and we're going to expand on them shortly and in the rest of the presentation. We continually, as I said, search for ways to add long-term value for our shareholders while holding true to our values. And that is why, consistent with our determination to maximize long-term value, we have examined these suggestions and variations on them many times before, and will continue to do so in relentless pursuit of value. We're always open to new ideas to lift value and returns wherever they come from. The ideas, that is, but returns too, I guess. Before Peter and I take you through each of Elliott's suggestions in more detail, I will summarize the work we have done to increase BHP Billiton's returns and that positions us for significant and exciting growth in long-term shareholder value. Today, we are a far more efficient company, and we're able to withstand any near-term uncertainty and respond profitably to a wide range of long-term scenarios. In short, we've made significant progress, and we've built a stronger and more agile company, well positioned for growth. Our plans have delivered results for our shareholders. As I've already said, we've embedded productivity improvements of over $11 billion in just the last 4 years. We've simplified the portfolio and unlocked low-cost latent capacity. Our onshore US operation was free cash flow positive in the most recent half year and is poised for growth as prices recover. And we now enjoy strong cash flows, which have helped us maintain an A-rated balance sheet. Our capital allocation framework sets clear parameters for how we achieve safe and stable operations, deliver balance sheet strength through the cycle, pay shareholders a minimum of 50% of underlying attributable profit as dividends, and optimize the use of surplus cash. The capital allocation framework balances the need to invest in our business, to create strength and flexibility to take advantage of opportunities as they arise, and to efficiently return capital to our shareholders. Critically, we always consider cash returns, including buybacks, as a potential use of surplus cash in every reporting period as a part of this framework. And we always test any capital investment to make sure it's better than a buyback. Against a backdrop of political and economic uncertainty and volatility, which I say is forever with us, we have further strengthened the balance sheet and reinforced the application of our disciplined capital allocation framework, because it insulates our operations and allows us to invest through the cycle. We are the only company in our sector with an A rating from the three main rating agencies, and Standard & Poor's recently revised that outlook to stable. BHP Billiton has a strong track record of returning cash to shareholders. Since the merger with Billiton in 2001, we've achieved a 12.8% per annum compound growth in shareholder returns, which includes $56 billion of dividends and $23 billion of share buybacks, which have been undertaken in both PLC and Limited. So I'm confident, very confident, that we have everything in place to create significant long-term value well into the future. We're on track and we see enormous potential ahead. So we'll now step through each of Elliott's proposals sequentially, but it'll start with a proposal for the unification of the DLC.
Thanks, Andrew. Elliott suggests replacing the DLC with a new UK company which has its primary listing on the London Stock Exchange. As many of you know, we've reviewed the DLC structure in the past and will continue to do so in the future. But the DLC is not a constraint to our business. In fact, it allows us to do things that a unified company could not do, such as preserving franking credits for shareholders who value them most, structuring buybacks to secure the cheapest possible price to maximize value for all shareholders, allowing us a full primary domestic listing on both the LSE and the ASX, with secondary listing on the JSE and a US ADR program, and providing two important acquisition currencies in addition to cash. Every review we've undertaken has made it clear that the cost of implementation and loss of the advantages of the DLC significantly outweigh the minimal potential cost savings. There's almost nothing a single listed company can do that we cannot do in our current structure. Let me walk you through our findings in more detail, and starting with costs. Our assessment of Elliott's proposal has found that the net costs of unification are likely to be at least $1.3 billion, not including transaction costs or potential wastage of franking credits. In addition, South African shareholders, who comprise 17% of the PLC register, would likely be required to pay capital gains tax with no offsetting benefit. We've identified no other material benefits from unification. Elliott's unification proposal would also waste franking credits that are generated by assets held under Limited and from which Australian tax is paid. Under the DLC, these franking credits accrue in the Limited entity and are available to distribute to Limited shareholders as franked dividends. This provides Limited shareholders with a tax benefit that is not available to non-Australian tax residents. The DLC enables us to preserve these franking credits as they accrue and provide them to shareholders that are able to utilize them. If BHP Billiton were a single-headed company, an additional $7.3 billion of franking credits would have been paid to non-Limited shareholders since 2001. Most of whom cannot use them. The collapse of the DLC and the creation of a single UK-listed entity would mean that while franking credits would still be generated, they would be distributed to all shareholders. Their value would be wasted on anyone who is not an Australian tax resident. And to illustrate the point, consider a 50 cent per share dividend paid under the DLC, to which $700 million of franking credits would be attached. These franking credits are paid entirely to Limited shareholders, the group most likely to value them. Under Elliott's proposal, an additional $400 million of franking credits would be distributed for that same 50 cents per share dividend. But those additional franking credits would be paid to a significant number of shareholders who could not derive value from them. The DLC is not a constraint to our ability to return cash to shareholders when it is appropriate to do so. As the chart shows, since the DLC merger in 2001, BHP Billiton has returned approximately 50% of its underlying earnings to shareholders in the form of dividends and buybacks. So this includes approximately $56 billion in cash dividends and $23 billion in buybacks. The accounting treatment of Elliott's proposal also makes off-market buybacks less valuable for shareholders. Currently, off-market buybacks in Limited comprise almost entirely franked dividends, maximizing the value of the franking credits that can be distributed and the value derived by participating shareholders. but Elliott's proposal would materially change the structure of the balance sheet by adding a large merger reserve, which we expect would be classified as capital, to which franking credits could not be attached when distributed. This would mean that instead of an off-market buyback being deemed almost entirely a franked dividend, in future, the proceeds would comprise roughly 50% capital and 50% franked dividend. And as a result, the value of an off-market buyback to a participating shareholder would be significantly lower, 15% lower, in fact, for a shareholder able to fully value the franking credit. Elliott's unification proposal holds particular risk for limited shareholders. If Elliott's unification proposal was implemented and the new UK incorporated parent traded at a blended average of the current limited and PLC prices, as suggested by Elliott, that would be higher than the current PLC share price. However, the price of a new CHESS depository interest quoted in Australia and on the ASX would therefore be lower than the current limited share price. And this would clearly not appeal to limited shareholders. The long-term viability of ASX listing is also a risk. The trading could migrate to the primary LSE listing, meaning that the secondary trading of CDIs on the ASX would diminish. This transfer of value between groups of shareholders is a significant downside, especially in the absence of any other identifiable benefits that would be realized. It should also be noted that as a legal matter, each of PLC and limited shareholders would need to separately approve Elliott's unification proposal. We believe Elliott's approach would be the subject of regulatory uncertainty. Under the unification proposal, both Limited and PLC would become subsidiaries of a UK incorporated NewCo. Limited, as an Australian company, would also no longer be the ultimate holding company of its Australian assets. And this would be inconsistent with the conditions imposed at the time of the merger of BHP and Billiton in 2001 and would require the consent of the Australian Foreign Investment Review Board. So in summary, would continue to reduce the costs and complexity of the DLC while maximizing its unique benefits. And yet the costs and risks of unwinding it under many options, including Elliott's, remain high. But we'll keep this under review. I'll now hand back to Andrew to speak to Elliott's proposal to demerge the US petroleum business.
Thank you, Peter. Look, I've been asked the question about the fit of petroleum in our business at every major milestone in my time at the company, including when I became CEO and certainly at the demerger of South32. And on balance, I continue to conclude that petroleum is a very good fit with our portfolio and our strategy. It has been part of BHP Billiton for more than 60 years, and in the last 5 years, it's been our highest margin business with an average underlying EBITDA margin of 66%. And it, going forward, it has our highest returning possible growth options. Petroleum significantly diversifies BHP Billiton's cash flow, and it allows us, therefore, to invest and return capital throughout the cycle. Our petroleum assets fit well with big coal, big copper, and big iron ore. And I believe there are more synergies between E&P and big coal, copper, and iron ore more than there are with smaller downstream minerals like those in South32, or than those that exist between E&P and downstream oil and petrochemicals. The diversification of our portfolio is one of our strengths. It's almost unique. It's certainly unusual, but unusually advantaged, and we seek to make the most from it. Our minerals businesses are better by being alongside petroleum, and our petroleum business profits by being alongside minerals. There are strong operational synergies from the combination of oil and mining within the portfolio. Talent, ideas, and best practice fall across this uniquely diverse group. And this is going to be accelerated by our new operating and our new culture, and we plan to do so. However, Elliott's plan would destroy this potential value uplift. Petroleum has and will make our minerals business, actually all our business, better at safety and maintenance. minerals practices are some of the things that have helped propel our shale business to the best in class on many dimensions. And we're already reinventing how to map and dig for coal and potash much more effectively with technology taken from the petroleum business. While there has recently been a period of unusual correlation in prices across all our commodities, the long-term trend shows the clear benefits of diversification. And this has been noted by many, including the credit rating agencies like S&P, and as such is beneficial to our cost of capital. The outlook is attractive, and our large quality resources deliver long-term returns and substantial optionality. BHP Billiton's scale and financial strength are a key competitive advantage for the petroleum business. It is stronger as part of BHP Billiton, backed by the financial strength required to pursue new opportunities when the time is right. A standalone US business would lose access to BHP Billiton's balance sheet. We could not have won the Trion bid without the scale and scope of the minerals businesses alongside. The small US independent proposed by Elliott would have failed. Elliott's proposal to separate our US oil business shows a fundamental misunderstanding of how we work. The oil industry works on partnerships between the major operators who work together globally to improve safety and environmental performance, as well as to work on the efficiency of our operations. Were we to adopt this proposal, our global partners would have to work with a broken up, balkanized BHP Billiton. The common relationships we enjoy that drive our advancement on the Mexican and US sides of the Gulf of Mexico and in Trinidad and here in Australia and elsewhere will be ripped apart, destroying efficiency, value, and HSE performance. In our onshore business, we have achieved significant operating and capital productivity improvements, which unlock value. We've increased investable inventory to greater than 3,000 net wells that deliver at least a 15% internal rate of return. We've adopted a nimble and commercial approach to run this business. We've optimized our acreage, some by asset trading. We've implemented a gas hedging program to lock in returns and maximize value from our very large resource. We've reduced drilling costs in the Black Hawk by 64% since financial year 13. And because these operations are part of the broader BHP Billiton group, this enables us to opportunistically develop the resource when the time is right and secure attractive returns when investing into rising prices. As a standalone business, the flexibility to preserve the resource and only ramp up production and maximize value at the right time would not exist. So the business, in summary, is now in excellent shape and is delivering. So as we've recently demonstrated, demergers can create value, but not so in this case. We do not believe that the idea of demerging a US petroleum business makes sense. Elliott's proposed demerger would not materially simplify BHP Billiton in the same way as the South 32 demerger did. And further, the market has all the information it needs to value our US petroleum business. This demerger would create significant risk for a subscale separated business. It would lose access to BHP Billiton's balance sheet, operating synergies, and would incur high overhead costs. A New York Stock Exchange listing would not suit all BHP Billiton shareholders and could result in material flowback. And for those shareholders forced to sell, it would crystallize value at the low point in the cycle. This business is good for BHP Billiton, and BHP Billiton is good for this business, and for its shareholders and its value, which are being maximized under our ownership. I'll now hand back to Peter to discuss Elliott's mechanistic buyback proposal.
Thanks, Andrew. BHP Billiton is committed to return surplus capital to shareholders at the right point in the cycle. In fact, we've returned almost the equivalent of our current market capitalization in buybacks and dividends since the merger. As Andrew explained, we make decisions about the best mechanisms consistent with our capital allocation framework. Buybacks have been and will continue to be a core element of that framework. We must maintain our strength and flexibility while ensuring resilience through all cycles. And that requires flexibility at the bottom of the cycle and discipline at the top. Right now, our balance sheet is our priority. Now is not the right time to pursue a $6 billion buyback like that proposed by Elliott. Nor is a mechanistic approach to capital management appropriate for a resources company. As the graph demonstrates, a buyback of the magnitude proposed by Elliott would significantly increase net debt levels and diminish credit metrics. It would undo the work we've done to strengthen our balance sheet, to create flexibility and resilience, and would not be in the long-term interests of our shareholders. And I want to address Elliott's suggestions that BHP Billiton should target mechanistic credit ratios and conduct regular buybacks with the resulting excess cash. It should not come as a surprise to anyone on this call that the resources industry is a cyclical one. We have a responsibility to manage the company so that we remain resilient throughout the cycle, and we must also invest to maintain and grow our production and create future value for shareholders. As the chart shows, had we mechanically managed our balance sheet to a 1.3 times ratio, we would have bought back shares at the top of the cycle in financial year 12. No further buybacks would have been possible from financial year 13 onwards, and debt would have reached unsustainable levels as shown with the net debt to EBITDA ratio reaching 4.2 times. In framing their proposal in this way, Elliott appears to have ignored the realities of how resources companies create value.
Thank you, Peter. So let me conclude by saying once again that we welcome ongoing dialogue with all our shareholders, including Elliott, to create value. And I cannot overstate enough my strong belief that BHP Billiton is on the right track. After several years of considered and deliberate effort, BHP Billiton is a stronger, simpler, more productive company. We have the right assets in the right commodities with the capability and the culture to prosper. Our strong balance sheet provides stability, and we are well positioned, very well positioned, to deliver additional value to our shareholders. We see enormous potential ahead if we stay true to our strategy. Thank you for your time and your interest.